Welcome to tonight's show. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and I'm keeping my head down.
That was my best still. I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and it looks like I'll be sober for this show.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I'm scratching my arse like those engineers. At least I think it's my arse.
I'm Norma Snockers, and I've knitted myself a flak jacket.
I'm Mike Rochburns, and I wonder if there's any of that moonshine left.
And I'm Sandy Grevis, and I've given my helmet a good polish, just in case.
Oh, the mind boggles. Right, I suppose we ought to get on to the moderately, slightly less explosive headlines. So, bong. When the stations are rocking, be careful with your docking.
Hutton presenter takes a battering.
Colonisation clarity as Brewer brings an update.
Commander Nem has red on her.
Soloists complain about squadrons. Again.
Innovative Geyser Tech as Hutton issues warning.
And there's nothing innovative about the state of Hutton, but I try and make sense of it all.
The Pilots Federation has issued a formal advisory regarding increasing issues with automated docking systems at asteroid bases. The problems, described as navigation ambiguity resulting from structural non-uniformity, have led to multiple minor collisions, some spiralling, and one case of a ship becoming lodged between two bulkheads marked not an exit. Asteroid bases constructed by hollowing out large space rocks and installing landing facilities on the interior surface have long been a popular choice in remote or economically opportunistic systems. The process involves removing valuable ore, selling it, and then inhabiting the hole. While cost-effective, the resulting geometry is often asymmetrical and shaped more by mineral veins than by engineering logic. Docking computers, many of which are still based on models originally trained in wireframe simulation environments, appear to be struggling. The traditional training environment featured only standardized Coriolis structures, symmetrical, clearly aligned, and with a single rotating slot. Asteroid bases, by contrast, tend to have entrances positioned at unconventional angles with uneven rock surfaces, overlapping superstructures, and interior layouts that deviate from legacy docking algorithms. The result has been a notable increase in failed docking and undocking attempts. Some vessels have been observed entering successfully, only to spend several minutes pivoting inside the hangar without a clear exit vector. Others have required manual override after approaching structural components not designed to receive spacecraft at speed. The Pilots Federation has recommended that commanders disable automated docking when approaching these installations and consider manual procedures, particularly when flying vessels with wide wingspans or poor reverse thrust. A spokesperson from Remlock Insurance confirmed that asteroid-related scrapes are now categorised under structural irregularity and advised pilots to review their coverage before approaching any base whose name includes the words mine, quarry, or rock. Design teams from Brewer Corporation declined to comment on the matter, noting only that space is three-dimensional and that pilots should be using all of it.
Hutton Orbital's emergency power grid has returned to full function this week, following what officials confirmed was an unauthorised battery entry by technician Mike Rochburns. The hair-raising incident began when irregular readings were reported in one of the station's main capacitor arrays. These were later traced to someone attempting to charge a hot plate via the diagnostic port. Rochburns, a self-proclaimed bright spark, acted without clearance and entered the power housing wearing what he described as the proper kit. This included insulated boots, high-voltage gloves, one of which was holding a mug of tea, and a personal Faraday cage that had been modified from a poultry transport frame. The grounding cable was clipped to his belt loop. He remained inside for nearly 2 days, emerging occasionally to request tools, more tea, and at one point a set of non-conductive trousers. Deck C through E experienced brief power fluctuations, several data pads rebooted unexpectedly, and a warning klaxon began issuing instructions in Portuguese. The internal fire suppression system activated twice, once in response to smoke, and once em principio geral. Of course, he religiously followed the one-hand rule to prevent electrical current passing through his dicky tucker. Unfortunately, he forgot the one hand and not a foot rule, which sent current shooting up one leg before exiting via his fingers and, en route, causing his gusset to catch fire. Fortunately, his rubberized suit was described as a bit sweaty, which, in a rare case of bodily humidity working in one's favour, helped prevent the flames from spreading. A spark from his fingertips arced to a nearby control panel, which has since been playing Jerry Lee Lewis on repeat. CCTV recordings of the aftermath were described by station staff as an illuminating experience, with Mike clearly exhibiting signs of shaken nerves and a rattled brain. Audio picked up him muttering something while extinguishing his groinal area that sounded like it started with "goodness gracious." He was last seen hosing himself liberally in the crotch with a portable CO2 unit.
"No immediate danger,"
Rochburn said afterwards.
"Just a bit of residual energy and a brief flare-up in the trouser region. I'd call it an illuminating experience."
Maintenance staff later confirmed the battery was functioning normally and had never been at fault. The issue was traced to user error at a nearby console. A new sign has been posted outside the battery housing reading, "Do not enter. No, not even you." Architect Lael Wolf reviewed the incident.
"He's unharmed," she said. "Which is the main thing. The secondary thing is we're locking that door."
Rochburn has been placed on shore leave and advised to avoid high voltage systems, metal ladders, and carpets.
I've updated my checklist,"
he confirmed.
"Item 1, ask first. Item 2, wear fire retardant underlayers."
The Pilots Federation Colonization Department, working alongside Brewer Corporation, has announced a sweeping update to how new station facilities are brought online. The update aims to ensure that services like commodities markets, outfitting, and the occasional working bar now appear more reliably, though still not necessarily where or when anyone expects. Until now, some station services were refusing to activate at all, while others sprang into life spontaneously in stations that lacked walls. The new approach promises a system that is, at the very least, deliberate. Under the changes, a commodities market will appear by default at most ports. However, if the station is criminal, scientific or military in nature, the situation becomes more nuanced. In those cases, it must also be near either a comms installation, a bar, or something called an outpost hub. Officials have declined to explain what role gin, small talk, or vaguely defined hubs play in a logistics chain. But the implication is that a warship simply won't sell biowaste unless there's somewhere nearby to chat about it first. For services like universal cartographics or vistogenomics, station upgrades now hinge on whether the installation is sufficiently close to something vaguely scientific. Satellite dishes, biology settlements, and anything with a blinking blue light will apparently suffice. In a quiet policy success, stations now also stop advertising services they physically don't possess, such as shipyards in windowless bunkers or crew lounges on uninhabited rocks. Interior design is also affected. Each Thursday, the dominant economy at a station is assessed and the carpets updated accordingly. Agricultural economies now receive 2 potted plants and a wall graphic labelled fresh. Industrial stations are sprayed with a fine layer of something sticky. The update also corrects a number of incidents in which megaships and construction platforms were accidentally deployed inside stars. Engineers have adjusted their placement protocols, and the coffee machine now faces the other way. A Pua spokesperson confirmed that the latest infrastructure logic is
much improved
and
should result in stations offering appropriate services in appropriate places.
Though stop short of saying whether any of it makes sense. More updates are expected, possibly with a flow chart.
Commander Nemb, no, sorry, we're not translating that for you as we'd get taken off air, has been admitted to the Hutton Infirmary and handed over to the tender ministrations of Nurse Wyeth today after an incident of industrial-scale gardening went catastrophically wrong. She is reported to have red on her, numerous breaches to her hull integrity, and a wrist that appears to have an extra joint in it. Medical staff described her condition as lumpy but largely repairable. The commander had been assisting in seasonal maintenance of the ornamental gardens at O'Connor City in Van Maanen's Star, part of a joint initiative to remove invasive coniferous vineweed and prepare the site for the station's artificial spring cycle. This included adjusting light levels, refreshing soil chemistry, and discouraging the previously authorised programme involving automated pollinator drones. The work involved thermal shears, a high-pressure compost recycler, and, according to onlookers, an overconfident stance on a slippery slope. The incident occurred when a tangle of dormant vineweed, believed to have been properly sedated, reactivated unexpectedly during a root extraction. A sudden entanglement, a misplaced boot, and a high-velocity trip in a decorative but unsympathetic rock feature led to what emergency responders classified as non-flight-grade bodily geometry. Despite speculation, medical staff have confirmed the 2 red marks on her forehead are simply the early formation of her horns and are not related to the injury sustained. This development was expected and entirely unconnected to any recent exposure to fertilizer vapor. Her long-suffering husband, Commander Ed Hunter, issued a brief statement while carrying her portable Hutton badge-making kit.
"She does this,"
he said.
"Every spring, every bloody time. I've told them not to give her the shears."
Nurse Wyeth today has confirmed that the patient is in a stable condition and responding well to advanced medicines.
"There, there,"
she was heard to say.
"Take 2 of these and you'll feel better in the morning. And if not, I've got the bone printer warmed up and ready."
The commander is said to be resting comfortably, listening to soothing heavy metal music, and quietly pondering what she might do with several stabby-looking implements that she has found in the infirmary, should she manage to get her hands on her husband. Security personnel have since confirmed that, following a petition from Ed Hunter, only pointless children's crafting scissors will be permitted in her vicinity for the time being. The gardens at O'Connor have reportedly survived the encounter with only minor trampling, several deeply offended rose bushes, and a small ornamental pond now classed as grey water containment. Van Maanen's Star has issued a statement thanking the commander for her enthusiasm and kindly asking her not to come back until the azaleas have stopped flinching.
The Pilots Federation has released further details about the forthcoming Vanguard's update, aimed at enhancing the experience of squadron membership. The improvements include more structured tools for creation, management and reward systems tied to group activity, or as one forum user described it, "everything I don't want in one convenient bundle." As is traditional, the announcement was followed by the immediate and widespread complaints on the galactic forums. Chiefly, the commanders who have no intention of joining a squadron under any circumstances, but would still like the benefits associated with them.
This does nothing for solo pilots.
One post began, before continuing for 6 pages with detailed suggestions on how to redesign the entire feature set around individuals who have opted out of this feature. In particular, circular development. One enterprising commander proposed forming a squadron specifically for pilots who don't want to be in a squadron. Membership would be automatic, entirely optional, and participation actively discouraged. By joining, the members would gain access to all of the squadron-based tools, rewards, community resources, whilst remaining morally opposed to the concept of squadrons. The squadron was met with cautious approval from several dissenters, who expressed interest in being part of a formal structure so long as no one spoke to them, expected anything, or implied that they were part of a group. The Pilots Federation has acknowledged the feedback and confirmed that future updates will continue to include features for squadrons, non-squadrons, anti-squadrons, and groups of friends pretending not to be in squadrons for tax reasons. As a precaution, forum moderators have activated passive content protocols to prevent the thread from reactivating the power play debate.
Recent studies conducted on volcanically active satellites, particularly those exhibiting low mass orbital cohesion, tidally locked proximity to gas giants, and semi-chaotic crustal flexing, have revealed an increasing frequency of spontaneous subsurface volatile expulsion events. These are colloquially known as geysers. While historically regarded as picturesque natural phenomena or, at most, minor navigational obstacles, it has become apparent that these events pose a significant and unpredictable hazard to surface recon vehicles operating in or near active ejector zones. Particularly at risk are exploratory units deployed on moons, those tertiary bodies orbiting moons themselves, where gravitational baselines are sufficiently low that interaction with a high-pressure sublimation vent can produce not merely localized displacement, but in extreme cases, unplanned ballistic excursions exceeding escape velocity. Put plainly, the geysers are launching SRVs into space. These events are now formally classified as geyser-originated accidental trajectory syndrome, or GOATS. They are subject to a range of variables. These include crustal porosity, axial spin resonance, mineral saturation thresholds, and the unfortunate tendency of pilots to park directly on top of them to see what happens. Preliminary modelling suggests that under ideal circumstances, defined here as the worst possible alignment of mass, thrust vector, and surface rebound, an SRV can attain suborbital trajectory with only minor vehicle trauma. This is assuming the pilot maintains rotational equilibrium and does not attempt to correct spin manually while airborne. Those who do are advised to remain inside the cockpit until the screaming stops. In a related development, one particularly enterprising company has begun experimenting with geyser-powered orbital transit. The concept involves deploying reinforced umbrellas directly into an active geyser vent. These are attached to ultra-strong flexible cables which trail behind the ascending umbrella as it's violently expelled into orbit. Once the umbrella is altitude and anchors itself as a temporary orbital platform, the geyser is capped and its energy redirected to power a rudimentary lift system. Occupants of this so-called space elevator can expect significant acceleration, variable orientation, and occasional moments of apparent serenity, followed by rapid reorientation of personal gravity. Timings to reach the orbital platform, which eventually replaces the umbrella, are listed as approximate. Some may be early, others will be late, a few will not be seen again. The Pilots Federation has issued no formal endorsement of the scheme, but has updated local hazard signage to include umbrellas, cables, and uncontrolled upward journeys. Research continues into the precise composition of geyser ejecta and its correlation to propulsion profiles. Early indications suggest that sulfur-rich jets exhibit high initial impulse but poor directional stability. Water-based vents tend to launch more gracefully, though with significantly more spread, making landings unpredictable and often damp. Commanders operating in these environments are advised to employ caution. Avoid lounging atop suspiciously symmetrical rocks, and refrain from making remarks such as, "It hasn't gone off in ages." Should an unexpected vertical excursion occur, remain calm, conserve boost reserves, and remember, atmosphere or not, what goes up usually comes down. Eventually.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we ask Nemb to tend the BGS contemplative garden, and then wait for the screaming and shouting and swearing to start. What is a Jeb End anyway? Expansion goes on much as it has these past 4 weeks. Round and round the galaxy goes, where Hutton expands, nobody knows. Weirdness ensues in Wolf 294, where we are simultaneously expanding and retreating while infrastructure failure brings everything to a halt. It's an EDF system anyway, so just leave it. Your booms are in 36 Ophiuchi, Alpha Centauri, Bidmere, where all the wee old biddies live, Epsilon Eridani, LHS 1827, no, I haven't either, Lighton 143-23, Ross 671, Barnard Star, and Wolf 359. And, well, that's about it, really. But what does it all mean? Well, if you want to truck at our mission run, then do some or one of those in one of those boom systems. If you want to shoot it, then you're out of luck unless you go to the colonies. And if you want to smell raw sewage while pointing and laughing at those less fortunate than yourself, then why not pop along to Wolf 294 to survey the carnage? And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.